Here, the old gods are dead.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, this is Creepy Wee Podcast. I'm Rebecca with Liam.
Attention, big podcast!
I can't imagine how that sounded on the mic. Attention, big pocket. I'm going to start screaming that in Edinburgh.
I'm so obsessed. Yeah, in Edinburgh, but it's actually when you go into the businesses, thieving bastards. Fringe season, everyone. Fringe season is upon
Attention,
us.
Pickpocket.
Attention, pickpocket.
Yeah, not sponsored, but I am Brew Extra ice cream.
I want to try it so bad, but the cream soda flavor of it. Did you know, like, so many people? So, like, cream soda in certain parts of the world is different to, like, what cream soda is here. Narius always says that cream soda, as it is in Lithuania at least, tastes the same as Iron Brew. And then a girl, Megan, that is going to be working with me soon, she's from Australia, and she said, oh, it just tastes like creamy soda. And I was like, what do you mean? No, it doesn't.
Cream soda tastes like creamy soda.
Yeah. But I'm so interested to see, like, if the ice cream version of Iron Brew just tastes like cream soda.
No, it tastes like vanilla Iron Brew. It's
that
really
sounds
good.
Deranged almost.
It's like if vanilla Coke was actually good.
I like vanilla Coke. I don't like vanilla Diet Coke. So
I think
wrong.
Vanilla Coke's like two vanilla. This is fucking riven.
Do you know who does a good paracetamol? Morrison's.
No, granddads around the world are so right for enjoying cream soda.
Yeah, I agree. I tried to get Nerys to try red cola the other week and he was like, oh, I don't like it.
Blow your head off that stuff. Tizer's amazing. I love Tizer. Tizer and a chippy.
Dad drinks really go so hard. Like, they're so good.
Oh my God. There's Post-it at my door. Hold on. I got a dress.
Ew.
It's for a wedding.
You're not a girl.
It is debated.
Those genetics, they do be. There is something to be said.
I was talking to my cousins on my dad's side, and they're all lassies as well. And we were just talking about how we've been stuck with, like, a very male face, and not in, like, a hot model kind of way, just in, like, a man in a wig.
Advertises themselves on dating apps as, like, cross-dresser in Queen's Park. Is that what you mean?
No, I just genuinely look like my dad. Like, my girlfriend, like, famously looks like Winona Ryder, and I look like my dad. derogatory. I look like my father.
She does look like Winona Ryder, actually.
See, this is what happens when you're really funny.
Sometimes it does work. That's why I don't believe in incels, and I really just think they're horrible people and they don't realize that. I'm just pretty, I think.
Good for you.
I will never say a bad thing about myself. That's one thing.
So we got tickets to Eras. Fuck everybody else who didn't.
Who else is coming? Comment below, even though this isn't a YouTube video. Comment below. Who's coming?
The way that I'm going to be like burping for this whole episode because of that fucking I'm very extra.
This episode sponsored by Dads Around the World. What have you been up to other than Eras? What did you do at the weekend? We're recording this on time. This is so fucking crazy. It's so laid back when we don't have to like hit.
Yeah, I know. When we're not recording on like a Monday or Tuesday night. Technically, we are recording on a Tuesday night, but a week ahead of schedule.
That's so fucking crazy.
That's very fitting me right into episodes in one afternoon. I didn't see if anybody has any tips for this, please let me ken. But basically, I'll do like a block of shifts, and then the day off that I have immediately after that, I get like a headache or a migraine. Mm-hmm. And I want to die because then I ruin like one of my days off by being like asleep the entire day.
Yeah.
So skip Saturday, and then on Sunday, watched National Treasure and made loads of margaritas.
That sounded so like the all of your drinks that you've been making recently have looked nice.
Yeah, I got a cocktail shaker. I'm really taking the piss. to be fair, I normally don't drink spirits and I drink beer and I get like really, really, really badly hungover. And now I'm drinking spirits and I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I don't even have a hangover.
I thought you were going to say I get really badly homophobic. And I was like, I don't think that's the alcohol. I think you've always been that way.
No, that's you.
I think we both. I'll say something and you'll go, so true, actually. Like, that's so valid. No, you're complicit. Implicit?
I'm like in a mid-century housewife, Stepford wife, cocktail making era.
Okay, so you are homophobic.
Yeah.
Crabcast. Core.
What did you do?
Oh my god. I missed my entire Sunday because I was up until 6 a.m. because I went to a party and I've not like stayed up that late in a very long time. Yeah, and I couldn't stop saying pig fucker. You pig fucker. Like, because we were there with like from? I don't know. I think it's from or it's maybe Bold and Beautiful. But I can't stop saying it. But I kept saying it to, because like it's my friends and it's this group of boys from home that like famously hate us and they think we're all so stupid. So we just go there and like act up the stupidity and be annoying. And they think we're stupid, but I got them with the same three jokes like 20 times in a night. Like one of them from the window. Picture this. We're out on the street. I shout up, Kieran, is Joe there yet? And he's, Joe who like? And I said, Joe mama. And that got him. But then I got him with, sorry, my great granny's actually in hospital with ligma right now. And then he was like, what's ligma? And then it's like, ligma, and then you just insert anything like
so
ligma.
So you think people who fall for these kinds of jokes are stupid?
I never said that.
I'm just saying
it's funny that they
not active listeners who care about everything you say.
I'm just thinking it's funny that they think that I'm stupid, and I got them with like the most bottom of the barrel humor multiple times. Oh my god, when I was at the party, someone's telling me a really creepy story about Bleskin House that was really good, and next episode, hold me accountable, I will find it out, because I was so fucking drunk that I've forgotten it now.
Still haven't picked what we're doing for the next episode, but I will begin writing it tomorrow. So maybe for once in my life I'll honour that.
They can't force us to do the Selkies again. Although someone commented something, and even I knew that we had done it, so like you're not paying attention if I know we did it and you don't. Like,
yeah,
not you, like the person commenting.
when I put out a call being, well, no, when we were like kind of like joking around being like, you're never going to guess like what we're doing. And it was a series on William Wallace. We were like, it's a Scottish icon. And somebody messaged us and was like, oh, Sonny Bean. I was like, real ones know that it's one of your worst episodes.
The early episodes got our trash and everyone knows it. No one's listening. This is our note that no one's listening. Someone said Bleskin House as well. And I was like, that was the first episode.
Which has famously been edited like 20 times because the rough cut out. Oh.
And it's still bad. And it's still bad.
Yeah, it's still rotten. Busted, rotted, gutted. For our 100th episode, we'll read it. But aye, speaking of episodes that are actually good, last episode. Some of my best work. That script was written by hand. The whole script for this William Wallace series is like 5,000 words. That's really? Crazy. Yeah.
That's how long it took.
I did it in an afternoon on downtime.
Boo! Nerd!
Aye, all right. I got paid like £24 to write that.
Okay, you win. You win this round. I have to do work at work, so...
No, we'll take a wee break and we'll talk about William Wallace part 2.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
So apologies to anybody who can hear the children screaming outside my door. It is really bad. Like, I actually can't do much about it because I'm not about to move my whole setup.
Oh my God, you should embrace your inner old person and be like, get off my lawn.
No, I think it's good that they're playing outside and not like on their iPads. Anywho, so in the last episode, we kind of like left on a cliffhanger. If you haven't listened to episode 1 of William Wallace, I suggest that you do that. But I will give a brief summary of what we spoke about. So William Wallace is born in the late 1200s. When he was a wee boy, the King of Scotland, Alexander III, died. And then basically all of his heirs died, leaving... like basically a fight for the Scottish throne. And the Scottish nobles at the time put the King of England in charge of selecting that monarch. Edward I of England picked a puppet, basically, who he could manipulate and put him on the throne. And his name was John Balliol.
Such a shock.
John Balliol defies Edward by basically signing the old alliance with France. England are currently at war with France during this point. So... Edward invades Scotland, and so starts the First Wars of Scottish Independence. And along comes a little outlaw turned rebel, William Wallace, who is fighting in like skirmishes, like along the Scottish borders and in Dundee and stuff. And he meets up with a Scottish nobleman called Andrew Murray, and they join forces to meet the English army at Stirling. And that's where we left off. That's pretty decent summary of the WWE.
That was a really good summary. It's like, and we really did a whole episode on that when we could have just.
So I'll just summarize this next episode. No, so this is a majority of this episode's going to be about two battles: the Battle of Stirling Bridge, one of the most famous battles in Scottish history, and the Battle of Falkirk, which not a lot of people care about, and you'll understand why. Mm-hmm. Andrew Murray and William Wallace and their forces are arriving at Stirling to face Edward's forces. Edward is not there. So Stirling, being at the centre of the Lowlands, was important strategically. Towering over the flatlands stands one of the most formidable castles in Britain. Through the flatlands surrounding the town runs the River Forth, which in this course of the river is very deep and fast running. This combination of factors kept the Highland clans at bay for overrunning the Lowlands. And in the Middle Ages, Stirling was very much the gateway to the Highlands. And the key to that gateway was a narrow wooden bridge which spanned the Swirling Forth a little above the town.
The Forth Road Bridge.
It's kind of like important to ken why. So capturing, like, obviously, like, it is like really strategically important, but like to mention the fact that it's like the gateway to the Highlands is like really, really important, because basically if Edward's army was able to capture Stirling Castle, they would just piss into the Highlands and capture everywhere else very easily. It's like the last fortress before the Highlands. And because the Highlanders are all basically really spread out or fighting amongst themselves, like in small factions, it's pretty easy to overrun if the English army could get there. This narrow wooden bridge, which was the gateway to the Highlands, was Stirling Bridge, and this was vital in any confrontation between the Scots and the mighty England. With the exception of the struggling fortress of Dundee, all of Scotland north of the Forth was in Scottish hands. The large English army, which was headed by Earl Warrenne and a treasurer named Cressingham, was now being led through the centre of the country, aiming at relieving Stirling Castle and seizing the bridge. Then they could basically pacify the Highlands, which was the territory which was controlled by Murray and Wallace. The stakes were really high. If England succeeded, then Murray and Wallace would be forced back onto the defensive and would be reduced to insignificant partisan leaders. If they succeeded, however, they would be in a strong position not only to hive out the English, but to take power over Scotland into their own hands. And never before had the community of Scotland stood up to the might of the English army. At the beginning of the Wars of Independence, at the battles of Dunbar and Irvine, which we spoke about in the last episode, Scottish levies had been commanded by feudal superiors. In one, they had been soundly defeated, and in the other, they had been embarrassingly forced to surrender. Because of like what happened at Dunbar and Irvine, like the English like really, really are underestimating like what the Scottish army is capable of. Like they genuinely think they're going to go and stamp them out and take over the whole of Scotland. I mean, it says much for the common people and the lesser gentry and the peasantry who rallied with Wallace at Stirling that they were prepared to risk everything, because they obviously, like, these like poorer people are like, well, like, this is a last resort, because what's happened in the past with like these English battles, like, we're literally ready to die for this.
Yeah.
Like, we're ready to die to get these people out of our country. Also speaks volumes to the leadership of Murray and Wallace. The both of them were like hardly being teenagers. They're in their early 20s, and they took to the field against one of the most seasoned warriors of the period and the most experienced army in all of Europe. So the collective English forces amounted to about 1,000 horsemen, 50,000 infantry, drawn from all counties of England north of Trent, but also including sizable contingents for Ireland and Wales. A second army of 8,000 foot soldiers and 300 horsemen was headed north from Carlisle at the time that this huge army was moving to Stirling. So, like, they've already got an army coming ahead because they think that Stirling's going to go well.
Yeah.
And that they're going to be able to just send all these forces in to the rest of Scotland. I will say, though, that, like, I mean, it sounds like the 1,000 horsemen and the massive amount of like infantry, they're not all there yet. But even still, like, even if you cut that in half, like, they could still kill like the whole Scottish army, no problem. Yeah. This formidable force included veterans of the wars in the Holy Lands and France and a few campaigns in Wales and previous conflicts in Scotland. It was well equipped, well armed, and more importantly, it was an army that had never known defeat.
Yeah.
On the other side, the Scots had shown poor field craft at Dunbar and a general lack of discipline, while the disunity of their leaders, which was so evident at Irvine only 2 months previously, was common knowledge in the English ranks. Like, the Scottish army was a total joke.
Yeah, very, like, like Lord of the Rings, very...
Yeah, but, like, you can, like, in Lord of the Rings where, like, there's just, like, an art, like, the wee animated army of orcs, and, like, it just gets, like, swept down in, like, one fell... motion.
Yeah,
that's like basically what Irvine was like. Like, the Scottish soldiers were like tripping out of themselves, stabbing each other, like falling in the mud. Like, they were totally like unprepared. That's like
kind of funny though, like to imagine.
I mean, it is like, but like obviously these are like young men that are being like sent to death basically. Like, even like the Scots horses are like really thin and small. They're not like Shetland ponies, but like basically, yeah. Imagine like if the English are on like huge war horses, I reckon if like they would have been the quite the size of like Clydesdales, but they're like massive, muscly, fast horses that could take a beating. And then the Scottish horses are like,
yeah, like Scottish breeds of horses go to two extremes, as far as I'm aware, because one of the people that I work with right now is like a horse girl. And so they're like Clydesdales, like massive, which is far less populous than like the vast amount of different ponies that they have in Scotland, like a lot of pony breeds, which are very small.
Thin, small, very frail. Thin legs. And obviously Clydesdale, like this was like nearly like 800 years ago. Like, even Clydesdales wouldn't have been like they were as big as they are now. Like, they've been like bred to be like disgustingly huge. Crowd control. Anyway, so Wallace would have kent how few of the Scottish lords were supporting him, but the nobles of Scotland had actually been tamed by this point. They were either serving King Edward in his war with France, or they were imprisoned in the Tower of London or other English prisons. So Wallace hasn't got a lot of support, and the remaining nobles that are in Scotland would never support somebody who's a such like low nobility. Like, Wallace is a nobleman, but it's like the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just because his father was like an unaccomplished archer. The like family name became like
noble adjacent. Yeah.
Yeah. And they had like a small amount of land, but like it's nothing like serious. Like, nae noblemen were coming out to help him apart from like Murray and like four other. And even Murray's like lesser gentry. Very lowborn. Anyway, John de Warenne led the English army alongside Hugh de Cressingham, who was the treasurer of Scotland for the English occupation. Cressingham in particular was extremely unpopular with the Scots and wasn't well liked by the English either. His presence only served to anger the Scots further. Neither Warenne or Cressingham saw the Scots as much of a threat. They arrogantly assumed that their army was superior and that a victory would be easy to obtain. I'm not going to lie, I don't blame them for having that opinion.
I know, well, if you think of, like, Irvine and stuff, like, it is very easy to assume, like, they were bozos and buttheads. They were bozos and buttheads.
What is that kind of like? Your pride will be your downfall.
Yeah, let's say that.
As a result of this, like, sense of importance, de Warenne actually sent a number of the soldiers home before the fighting began so that he could avoid paying their wages. And he even slept in late on the morning of the Battle of Stirling Bridge.
Damn. Managers have never changed. Managers have never changed. They do the same shit in retail on, like, Black Friday or something. Like, this is... And then you get shafted.
They're like, labor's like... a bit high. Does anybody want a fag break?
So we're not getting the footfall we thought we would. You can go home early if you want. Someone was so happy. I bet they saw the news after this and were like, yes.
I can't swim. I'm so glad that I went home. So between the two armies, there was only one way to cross the river, which was Stirling Bridge. The bridge was very narrow and would only allow soldiers on horseback to cross two at a time. Some of the English forces suggested crossing further upstream, but Cressingham convinced Warren that a direct attack was the best tactic, and the English army began to march across the bridge, unaware that they were heading straight into a trap.
Nice.
Wallace and Murray waited patiently as the English soldiers trickled over Stirling Bridge in small numbers. They held off their attack until there was as many English on the other side of the bridge as they could possibly fight, and then they charged. The Scots spear formations forced the infantry back into the advancing cavalry. Basically, when the Scots advance and put their spears in, all the soldiers who are at the front kind of fall back into the horses. The horses panic. It's an absolute mess. A pivotal change led by one of Wallace's captains caused some English soldiers to retreat as others pushed forward. And under the overwhelming weight, the bridge collapsed and many English soldiers drowned. De Warenne and his English forces retreated to Berwick near the border, leaving Stirling and its castle in the hands of Wallace and Murray. Cressingham was killed during the battle, and it's said that the Scots cut his body into pieces and that Wallace had a belt made for his skin that he hung his sword from. So basically, Wallace made sure that the skin for the top Cressingham's neck, down to his arse, was stripped off his back and tanned and turned into a belt so he could hold the hilt of his sword.
Not Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That's grim.
Yeah, I know, it's pretty fucked. apparently, there's an anti-Scottish sentiment that when the Scots had cut him up into pieces, they cooked him and they ate him. That definitely probably didn't happen.
No, definitely not. yeah, good for people thinking that.
I mean, I watched like a YouTube video about this, and I watched one about Bannockburn, and obviously they're like the only two battles that we basically won against the English, but each time it's been like kind of tactical genius.
Yeah.
I would recommend to anybody to watch a video on this where you can like watch the wee like crowds of the armies like meeting each other. Yes, yeah, it is quite interesting. And the bit in Braveheart where it's the Battle of Stirling Bridge is also really good. Although you can see like a wee car drive in the background.
Oh, bless.
My mum always used to say that. She's like, well, when you're watching Braveheart, there's a C.R. Smith van in the back. Anyway, so after the battle, Murray and Wallace assumed the titles of Guardians of the Kingdom of Scotland on behalf of King John Balliol. Murray died of wounds that he suffered on the battlefield sometime in late 1297, and later that year, Wallace would be knighted, becoming Sir William Wallace. Around November 1297, Wallace led a large-scale raid into northern England through Northumberland and Cumberland, and was quite successful in doing so, but also bear in mind that when you're raiding places like this, it isn't meaning like he's fighting the forces of England, he's burning everywhere, attacking civilians, etc., etc. So it's like, I mean, that's what knights did.
I mean, yeah.
But it's not still very noble. So
yeah, no.
I would keep a feather in your hat about that. In April 1298, Edward I of England ordered a second invasion of Scotland. 2 days prior to the Battle of Falkirk, 25,000 foot soldiers were paid. More than half of them would have been Welsh. They plundered Lothian and regained some castles, but failed to bring William Wallace to combat. The Scots shadowed the English army, intending to avoid battle until shortages of supplies and money forced Edward to withdraw, at which point the Scots would then harass his retreat. The English quartermaster's failure to prepare for the expedition left morale and food supplies low, and a resulting riot within Edward's own army had to be put down by his cavalry. In July, while planning a return to Edinburgh for supplies, Edward received intelligence that the Scots were encamped nearby at Falkirk, and he moved quickly to engage them in the pitched battle that he had been waiting for. So this is like, Murray's no longer alive, obviously, so this is like Wallace's battle. It's what he's fully in command of. He arranged his spearmen in four circular defensive hedgehog formations, probably surrounded by wooden stakes and connected by ropes. The English, however, employed Welsh longbowmen, who swung tactical superiority in their favour. The English proceeded to attack with cavalry and put the Scottish archers to flight. So basically all Scotland has is these like spear formations and then some cavalry and some foot soldiers.
Yeah.
None absolutely impressive.
Yeah.
The Scottish cavalry withdrew as well due to its inferiority to the English heavy horses. Edward's men began to attack the spearmen, which were still able to inflict heavy casualties on the English cavalry. But it remains unclear whether the infantry shooting bolts, arrows and stones at the spearmen proved the deciding factor. They are taking so much heat that they essentially disperse. If you're in one of these like spear formations, the name escapes me, and someone dies next to you, you're tied to them. Yeah. So like it becomes really heavy and really sluggish and you're all kind of trapped together. It's like the Battle of the Bastards on Game of Thrones.
I was literally about to say it feels like the scene from the Battle of the Bastards was based off of this loosely.
like where Jon Snow's like in piles of bodies and
except it feels like it was like, but what if this went well? What if someone came to their rescue?
So gaps in the spearmen are appearing. They're kind of carrying dead weight, and the English exploited this to crush the remaining resistance. The Scots lost many men, but Wallace escaped, though his military reputation suffered very, very badly. This was massively embarrassing.
It does sound like it's kind of cringe.
By September 1298, Wallace had resigned as Guardian of Scotland in favour of Robert the Bruce, the Earl of Carrick and future king. Mm-hmm. And John Comyn, King John Balliol's nephew. Details of Wallace's activities after this are vague, but there is some evidence that he left on a mission to the court of King Philip of France to plead the case for his assistance in the Scottish struggle for independence. But by 1304, Wallace was back in Scotland, and he had been involved in skirmishes or in the Scottish borders against the English.
Yeah, I was about to say, is it not like he went back to his sort of old ways?
Yes, the same kind of thing where it's like the pressures of like overbearing English officers on like Scottish natives results in like battles, and he just seems to be involved in these wee skirmishes. His reputation's never the same though, but he's still an important figure in the Wars of Independence, and he's a wanted man by the English, and he evades capture by the English until the 5th of August 1305, when John de Menteith, a Scottish knight loyal to Edward, turned Wallace over to the English soldiers at Robroyston, mm-hmm. a site commemorated by a small monument in the form of a Celtic cross.
Do you know what? I have a story about travelling once again today. So today, the day on which we are recording this episode, when I get to the train station, for some reason, all of the high-level trains, like the fast ones from Queen Street to Edinburgh, cancelled. So I had to get like the low-level train, but I got the one that went through Robroyston, and I was like, how weird. I would never, ever in a day go through the town of Robroyston, but here I am on the day I know I'm going to be recording the second part of the William Wallace episode in Robroyston. And I knew that that's where...
synchronicity.
I knew that's where he got, like, apprehended and died or whatever, but yeah.
Oh, no. He doesn't die there.
Well, yeah, he gets apprehended.
Yeah.
But that's where my knowledge of him ends.
When you're a bit tears and really horrible. Aye, letters of safe conduct for the King of Norway, Philip of France and John Balliol, along with other documents, were found in Wallace's possession and they were delivered to Edward. These are basically used as evidence against him for conspiring against the English, who they think are in charge of Scotland. Wallace was transported to London and then taken to Westminster Hall, where he was tried for treasons and for atrocities against civilians in war, quote, sparing neither age nor sex, monk nor nun. He was then crowned with a garland of oak to suggest that he was king of the outlaws. He responded to the treason charge, I could not be a traitor to Edward, for I was never his subject. It's very, very Christ-like.
Yeah, not the crucifixion.
Yeah.
Is this true?
That's like on record, because obviously this is during his execution. This part is actually documented quite well.
But the oak, even the oak.
Yeah, if you look
that
up any
excessive.
Like
excessive.
A garland of oak, yeah. He's like basically dragged around the streets wearing this as well. It is very Christ-like.
Shame.
It's like kind of how they put the crown of thorns on Jesus Christ and went, well, you're the king of the Jews.
You think that was their point of reference?
I mean, crucifixion and what we're about to talk about are two of the very worst ways to die. And the whole thing about them is that it's an entire spectacle. It's drawn out for hours. It is absolutely torturous, and it's just to put somebody in their place and humiliate them before they die.
Yeah, that's wild.
Following the trial on the 23rd of August 1305, Wallace was taken for the hall to the Tower of London. He was stripped naked and dragged through the city on the heels of a horse. He was hanged, drawn, and quartered, strangled by hanging but released whilst he was still alive. He was emasculated. He was eviscerated.
Does that mean they cut his pee-pee off?
So when he was emasculated, yeah, they cut his genitalia off and they burned it in front of him. He was eviscerated, which essentially means that he has a big gash cut on his stomach and his bowels are pulled through his stomach and they're burned before him. He was beheaded and then he was cut into four parts. So this is what is known as hung, drawn and quartered.
Yeah.
Wallace's head was dipped in tar and placed on a spike on London Bridge. His preserved head was later joined by the heads of his brother John and his compatriots Simon Fraser and Johnny Strathbogie. Wallace's limbs were displayed separately in Newcastle, Berwick, Stirling and Perth as a sign to ward off like would-be
rebels, yeah.
Yeah. A plaque unveiled on the 8th of April 1956 stands in a wall of St Bartholomew's Hospital near the site of Wallace's execution at Smithfield. It includes in Latin words, "I tell you the truth, freedom is what is best. Son, never lie with your life like a slave." In Gaelic, "Death and victory" are written as an old Scottish battle cry.
Mm.
Very, very horrid.
There are no happy endings in Scottish history, like in world history in general, but like Scottish icons have gruesome deaths.
Yeah, I feel like obviously like Wallace wasn't successful in his wars of Scottish independence, but his successor, Robert the Bruce. Let me say this again. Obviously Wallace wasn't successful during his campaigns of Scottish independence, but his successor, Robert the Bruce, would defeat Edward the First's son, Edward the Second, at the Battle of Bannockburn.
Classic.
And
classic.
Ugh. And sent him homewards, famously, to think again. And this would...
Nice. Very good.
Thank you. This would, like, free Scotland fae would-be oppressors until the Union, when Mary Queen of Scots' son James would become the King of Scotland and England. So, like, it wasn't all in vain, I didn't think. Like, Wallace went on to inspire loads of people, but... Yeah, Robert the Bruce might be the only Scottish hero who has, like, a slightly happier ending, because I'm pretty sure he just dies warm in his bed.
Oh, with his wee socks on. Like his woolly socks.
And he goes on to basically become, like, his daughter marries into the Stuart lineage. Yada, yada. All roads lead to Mary, Queen of Scots.
Yep.
But, yeah, what I would like today... I obviously want to do Robert the Bruce at some point, but I want to talk about every James. Obviously, we've done them in the order. We've spoke about James the Sixth. We've spoke about James the Second. So I would like to date all the Stuart Jameses, because every single one of them was fucked.
Wild. Wild.
Yeah.
Those bitches were crazy.
I mean, I think it like goes along with the pressures of being a monarch. Like, you're not allowed to do what you want, or if you do, you're a tyrant. You're micromanaged on every single level, especially if you're a woman or if you're gay. Not that I'm saying I feel sorry for monarchs in any way. It's just like all their stories seem to be like sad and fucked up, because monarchy is sad and fucked up. Like, maybe we should hang up that shit.
Yeah, let's not do that anymore. Oh my God.
So that's been the Creepy Wee Podcast. If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Instagram at the Creepy Wee Podcast, Twitter the Creepy Wee Pod, and if you want to buy merch or anything else, you can go to our website, thecreepywepodcast.co.uk. Thanks. Bye.
This is for my people who just laugh so bad. Yes, Reggie, baby. Man, are you late?
I knew you were going to do that one.
Did I do that for Mary Queen of Scots as well?
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We
want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niña Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.